In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Most of you, I'm sure, are aware of the news this last week of Spring High School, just down the road from here, where a student, because there was some sort of an altercation, pulled out a knife and stabbed four of his classmates, one of whom died. And if you watch the news, you saw the parents. They were frantically waiting outside the school for word, and reporters were going up to them, and you started hearing them say things like, "It's the school's fault. We need campus police. We need metal detectors." And of course, in inner city schools, these have become the norm, but in suburban schools, these are not yet the norm. But this is what people think the solution is metal detectors and having more police on hand. But the problem isn't metal detectors. It's not campus police. It's not a lack of gun control, because it was a knife in this case, and it's not a matter of knife control. It's a lack of parental control, and it's a lack of self-control. Back when we taught morality in schools, and we had discipline at home and at school, we didn't have metal detectors. And when I was going through school, I went to some schools that were a little on the rougher side. I mean, the students were not upper middle class students, and yet there was discipline maintained. I don't know of a single case where anyone was ever stabbed or shot. And it was still a very rare thing that you heard about a girl who got pregnant in junior high school or high school. But these are becoming the norm. We tell everyone that it's okay to kill babies before they're born. We teach them that morality is relative, and that you may have your morality and someone else may have their morality, and we're afraid to say what's right or wrong because we don't want to offend anybody. And we show all kinds of garbage on TV, and then something like this happens and people say, "How did this happen? How did it come to this?" Well, it's not any one thing that you could point to, but it's a whole host of things. But it's basically because our country has increasingly rejected God and His truth and figures that it knows better, and it's being filled up with its own ways, as the scriptures say. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor, and he wrote a book entitled Man's Search for Meaning. And in that book, he talked about his observations in the camp, that there were some people who had nothing to live for, and they died very quickly, whereas other people would endure great things because they had something to live for. And his whole book is about why we have to have some purpose in life. Because if we have some purpose, if we believe in something, we can endure just about anything. We can endure unimaginable suffering. But if someone doesn't believe in anything, if they don't believe that life has meaning, and they're put into a difficult situation like that, they'll throw their life away in a heartbeat. And even if they're living in a life of ease, we have people who will throw their life away. You would think that with all the material comforts that we have unimaginable wealth and luxury that the greatest kings of the ancient world couldn't even have imagined the poorest people in this country have. And yet, despite the fact that we have all these comforts, and despite the fact that we provide our children with all these advantages, we see that people are becoming more self-destructive, suicide increases, people are becoming more depressed. It's as if the world has gone crazy. But as King Solomon says, there's nothing new under the sun. If you read history, you'll find that these kinds of things have happened in the past, perhaps not on the same scale as we see them today, but we've had societies break down, families break down. Also, all the trains of thought that you see, atheism, even evolutionary theories, you find all these among ancient Greek philosophers, so these are not new ideas. Hedonism was a school of thought in the Greek world. It's not something that just started to happen in the 60s. So people have thought about these things and tried these theories. But what's interesting is even the hedonists, at least in the school of the Epicureans, came to realize that just living for pleasure and trying to have the maximum amount of pleasure led to pain and suffering. So for example, if you go out and you get smashed at a party, the next day when you have a hangover, then all of a sudden there's not a lot of pleasure that you have from that night before. And so at least the Epicureans, even though they were materialist and essentially hedonist, came to realize that if you really want to have real pleasure, you have to have some balance in your life, because any extreme is going to lead to pain and suffering. So that's what even an unbelieving Greek philosopher came to realize, and we have too many people who want to discover that for themselves the hard way in our culture. But if material advantage, wealth, privilege, power, if all those things could make someone happy, then the happiest person that ever lived should have been King Solomon. But if you read the book of Ecclesiastes, which is sort of his spiritual autobiography, you see that he wasn't always a very happy man. He was wise, he was intelligent, he investigated great things. The scriptures tell us that he studied animals and plants, and people came all over the world to ask him questions because he was just an incredibly intelligent man. He was a Renaissance man long before the Renaissance. And yet, in the book of Ecclesiastes, you see someone who is really struggling with the meaning of life. And he begins that book by saying, "Vanity of vanities," saith the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." The Hebrew word that's translated as vanity means a vapor. And so he's saying that everything in this world is like a vapor. And if something's a vanity of a vanity, that means it's the supreme example of something. It's an unreality. And if we go back to this student at Spring High School, we don't know all the facts as to what exactly led up to that, but it seems to have been gang-related, and it was two rival gangs that were where one had dissed the other or something like that. So this young man whips out a knife and stabs four people, killing one, probably because he felt disrespected and he felt like he had to maintain his street cred and show what a tough guy he was. He did that for something that wasn't real. The social dynamics that go on in high school are a vanity. When you become an adult and you look back at the people that you thought were really cool in high school, very often you see that those are the people who are in the food stamp line or who are having other kinds of difficulties and are not great successes in life, whereas the nerds, the people that everyone thought were uncool, those are the people that are doing really well, and the people who were cool are trying to get jobs from the nerds. Because that's the reality, or at least something closer to the reality than the life that's in high school. So this man, or this young man, killed somebody for something that really had absolutely no meaning, certainly something that was not lasting. King Solomon said, "What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to the place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again." He was observing that we come and go. We're just here, we're a blip on the radar screen. We're here just for a moment. But everything we see around us continues on in this cycle as if it doesn't matter whether we're here or not. As it says in Psalm 102, beginning with verse 15, "As for man, his days are as the grass, as a flower of the field, so shall he blossom forth. For when the wind is passed over it, then it shall be gone, and no longer will it know the place thereof. All things are full of labor, man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing." The senses are never satisfied. If you're seeking meaning in life by satisfying the pleasures, you're never going to reach a point where they're satisfied, because there's no satisfying the senses. "The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come thereafter." Solomon is saying there's nothing new in terms of human behavior. Of course, people invent new things, so you could say that those kinds of things are new, but in terms of human behavior, we've seen it all before. And also he's talking about the fact that we're going to be forgotten. If you think about your own family history, probably a lot of us could name maybe our great-grandparents and say a few things about them, but when you start going back another generation or a generation beyond that, there'd be very few people who would know anything about even the people whose genes we carry in our own DNA, much less other people, because those people have, for the most part, been forgotten. But we feel as human beings a sense that there should be some meaning to our life, that there should be some significance, and we want to be known, and we want to be remembered. Unfortunately, many people seek to be remembered in bad ways. In ancient Greece, there was a man by the name of Herostratus who, in 356 BC, burned down the Temple of Artemis in Ephesus. And why did he do it? Because he wanted to be remembered. He wasn't a great thinker. He wasn't an inventor. He wasn't an artist. And so he knew that when he died, no one would remember him unless he did some great thing or terrible thing in this case. And so he burned down one of the seven ancient wonders of the world because he wanted to be remembered. And the people of Ephesus passed a law and said it's against the law to even mention his name, but some Greek historian wrote it down, and so we remember his name to this day. So he got his wishes, but for all the wrong reasons. We also see the same kind of thing in our own time, where we have mass killers that seem to only want to become famous. And of course, on reality TV, we have all kinds of people who are doing all kinds of silly and foolish things, embarrassing themselves because they want to be known. We want to be remembered. We want our lives to have meaning, but there is no real meaning in the life of this world, this worldly existence, apart from God. King Solomon said, "I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is lacking cannot be numbered." He saw that even intellectual pursuits, of which he was a great achiever, were ultimately vanity if they're pursued for their own sake. And when he talks about the crooked cannot be made straight, he's saying there's problems that we can't solve. And when he says that that which is lacking cannot be numbered, there are things that we don't know and that we're never going to know. We can't search them out. We can't find them out. "I commanded with mine own heart, saying, Lo, I am come to great estate. I have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is vexation of spirit, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow." He sought to find happiness in this life. What is the meaning of all? Why are we here? And so he explored all the possibilities. And it goes on to say that he had all kinds of fun. He joked, he laughed, he ate very well. You can read in the scriptures about the lavish table that was set before him every day. He drank all the wine that he wanted. He had musicians at his beck and call. In those days, they didn't have radios or DVD players. But he was able to listen to music all the time, unlike most of the people on the planet at that time. He also had a sense of accomplishment because he built great buildings, including the Temple of Solomon. And so he had great achievements to boast of. He also had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and so he wasn't lacking in terms of the ability to satisfy his sexual desires. But it was all fleeting. He was still not happy. He was still not satisfied. But if anyone could have been satisfied by all those things, it would have been him. I mean, here's an extreme example of someone who had it all, and still saw that all this had no meaning. He said, "And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hand had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." He, of course, saw that there was value in wisdom. But then he went on to note that the wise and the fool both die exactly the same. "As it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the day to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth a wise man as the fool? Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous to me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? And he shall have a rule over all my labors wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun, this also is vanity. Therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. He's saying you could spend your whole life amassing great wealth, achieving great things, and the person that comes and inherits all those things after you die could be a fool and bring them all to destruction in a very short period of time. Also, when Solomon keeps talking about life under the sun, he uses the phrase under the sun almost exactly the same number of times as he speaks of vanity. What is under the sun? This earthly life. That's what he's talking about. If this is all there is, if there's nothing beyond this, then this life has absolutely no meaning. It's all passing. It's all a vapor that's going to be gone in a moment. And if you think, well, if I achieve some great thing, if I bring about a cure to cancer or something like that, then I'll be remembered at least. Well, one of these days, if there is nothing else in this universe, one of these days, scientists tell us the sun's going to go supernova and the earth is going to be burnt up. It's all going to be gone. There will be no one around to remember that you cured cancer or whether you did nothing. It won't matter if that's all there is. Solomon tells us in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, that God has put eternity in our hearts. Animals don't ponder the meaning of life. You don't see cows out in the field or dogs sitting there depressed because they're pondering the meaninglessness of their existence or that there will be nothing left after them. They don't think about those kinds of things. And though people may choose to live like animals, and unfortunately that's increasingly what we see in our culture, we are not animals. You can live like an animal, but you're not an animal, and you're always going to be miserable because you're not an animal, because God has put eternity in your heart. He has put an awareness in you that there is more to this life than what you can see around you, and you will be miserable until you come to realize that and find your meaning in your relationship with God. And if you don't find that in this life, then you'll be eternally miserable if you don't come to realize that. As St. Augustine said, "Thou hast made us for thyself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee." Life under the sun is only meaningful when it is lived for God. There's a lot more we could talk about in terms of the book of Ecclesiastes. I would encourage you to read it. But the very last chapter provides the meaning. The very last chapter is where you find where Solomon comes to the resolution. And it ends with these two verses. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Amen.